Hello and welcome to Room 106. I'm John Gagan from Planning Magazine. Every week, we descend into Room 106, the forbidding space where all new planning announcements and decisions are stored, and pull out the key things that you need to know. This week, we're going to talk about the biodiversity net gain requirement coming into force for small sites, some significant impending changes to planning enforcement, and government regulations that aim to speed up compulsory property purchases. And as usual, we'll be rounding up the other key news from the past week to make sure you're all up to speed on the latest goings-on in the planning sector. I'm going to seek out three of my colleagues who are already inside Room 106 to talk about all this. Here I go. Okay, now I'm in here, I need to find my colleagues. Where are they? Ah, there's Samantha Rexford, our Insight Editor. Hello, Sam.
Hi, John.
And there's our reporter, Alex King. Hello, Alex.
Hi, John.
And over there, I think, is our online editor, Toby Porter. Hi, Toby.
Hello.
Sam, I'll start with you. You've been looking at the latest on the introduction of the mandatory biodiversity net gain requirement. Can you tell us about what's happened?
Yes, so I've been looking at the news that the mandatory biodiversity net gain requirement has now come into force for small sites. The policy, which was introduced by the 2021 Environment Act, requires developers to demonstrate how they plan to achieve a minimum 10% increase in biodiversity with all new developments in order to obtain planning permission. The requirement applied to major developments from the 12th of February and came into force for small sites early this month on the 2nd of April. So when we talk about small sites, for residential development, we're talking about those that provide between 1 and 9 dwellings. And for commercial development, this refers to sites less than 1 hectare or where the building footprint is less than 1,000 metres squared.
Okay, so that's a significant change for developers of smaller sites. I know a lot of developers are concerned about the extra regulatory burden of having to provide biodiversity net gain. And early this year, it came to force for those developing larger sites, and now it's going to apply to smaller sites as well. Okay, so do you have any sense of the scale of the number of applications that will be subject to this latest requirement for smaller sites?
Well, the Local Government Association's Planning Advisory Service and non-profit organisation Future Homes Hub have estimated that over 1,000 small developers in England will now be required to comply with BNG, and that this will affect over 29,000 planning applications a month as a result of the new requirement coming into effect for smaller schemes.
Okay, so that's a lot of planning applications for local authority planning teams to deal with, and that's obviously going to be a big change for smaller developers who are already struggling in many cases. Okay, so is biodiversity net gain now fully in place, or are we waiting for any more elements of it to be introduced?
No, so it does not yet apply to nationally significant infrastructure projects, although the government said earlier this year that the implementation for these sites remains planned for 2025. So not, you know, yet comprehensively in place for all sites, but it is for major schemes and now for smaller sites.
So for the town and country planning process that local planning authorities deal with, it's there, but not yet for major infrastructure projects. Are there any resources out there for local authorities and developers to help them deal with this transition?
Yes. To coincide with the go-live date for small sites, the Future Homes Hub and the Planning Advisory Service launched BNG Online, which is a free digital resource which they said offers local planning authorities and applicants practical guidance and advice on complying with BNG. It was launched in collaboration with trade body, the National Federation of Builders, environmental consultancy, Joe's Blooms, and environmental software company, Werner. And the group said that the tool gives insights into how BNG should be factored into the planning process.
Okay, thank you, Sam, for that. That's clearly a very significant change for developers, particularly smaller developers and local authorities, to get to grips with. Alex, turning to you, you've been looking at the publication of a host of new government regulations that introduce different elements of the Levelling Up and Regeneration Act, including some that aim to speed up the compulsory purchase process. So these are known as commencement regulations. Can you firstly just tell us what exactly commencement regulations are?
Sure. So the government's Levelling Up and Regeneration Act gained royal assent in October,
but many parts of that act needed activating through what's known as commencement regulations. Commencement regulations are essentially statutory instruments produced by the government to enact certain pieces of legislation at a later date. On the 18th of March, the government published a set of commencement regulations for the Levelling Up Act, relating to several of its planning provisions.
Okay, so which parts of the Act are these regulations bringing into force?
So the main thing is they're enacting a part of the Act which amends existing legislation to allow so-called confirming authorities, usually the Secretary of State or a planning inspector, to conditionally confirm a compulsory purchase order or CPO. Under the previous system, CPOs could only be accepted or rejected as a whole, but allowing conditional confirmation of CPOs will mean the confirming authority can agree an order in principle while stipulating that it must meet certain conditions before it can be confirmed. Some commentators we spoke to about this said this change should enable CPOs to be delivered more quickly. However, planning authorities will not be able to grant these conditional CPOs until secondary legislation is in place. The Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities told planning that the conditional confirmation procedure will be fully operational early next year. The regulations also amend the rules the Secretary of State or a planning inspector must follow when considering objections to a CPO. And additionally, from May 2024, acquiring authorities, so usually local authorities, will need to publish online documents and notices that they need to issue as part of the CPO process.
Okay, so we're still waiting for some further regulations before these changes are fully implemented, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah, in the form of secondary legislation.
Okay, so did these regulations make any other planning-related changes?
Yes. So another big change was the introduction of three provisions, all effective as of this month, relating to planning data standards. The regs grant powers to the Secretary of State or the devolved governments of other UK nations to impose data standards on information provided in support of planning applications and on planning authorities' processing of planning data. They also grant powers to the Secretary of State and devolved administrations to require authorities to make certain data publicly available. However, the caveat to this is that the planning data standards haven't actually been published yet, meaning the provisions cannot yet be enacted. Elsewhere, the regulations have made permanent businesses' ability to serve food and drink to customers outside their premises without making a planning application, confer power on the Secretary of State to create further regulations relating to high street rental auctions, impose a duty on developers to serve a commencement notice before any work begins on site for certain types of development, and removes a cap on enforcement fines.
I'm going to speak to Toby in a bit more detail shortly about the enforcement changes. And you mentioned that they make permanent what's known as pavement licenses, allowing cafes and restaurants to serve customers outside their premises without needing a planning application. That was, of course, a temporary measure introduced during COVID to help these businesses. And interesting to see that's being made permanent. And so the planning data standards that you mentioned, again, that hasn't come to force just yet. We're still waiting for the standards themselves to be published, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And interesting to see that quite a few of these regulations relate to town centre planning. Can you tell us a little bit more about the high street rental auctions? Because that's quite an eye-catching proposal.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, these confer power on the Secretary of State to create further regulations relating to high street rental auctions. These auctions give local authorities powers to instigate auctions to rent vacant commercial properties in town centres and on high streets for leases from 1 to 5 years to attract new tenants. Now, this allows the Secretary of State to make regulations, including rules governing how the successful bidder at auction will be identified and providing for the local authority to specify the suitable high street use ahead of the auction. However, as one commentator pointed out to us, more work needs to be done before high street rental auctions can take place. For the most part, these provisions simply empower the Secretary of State to make the secondary legislation required to introduce the new regime. And as such, a considerable amount of additional work will be required before anyone can actually take place.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Alex. Toby, you've been looking at some pretty significant changes to the planning enforcement process that these regulations that Alex has been talking about implement. Can you tell us a bit more?
Yes. New enforcement regulations that come into force on the 25th of April will remove the cap on enforcement fines. The maximum level of fines, which can be imposed for failure to comply with a breach of condition notice, is currently £2,500. But the new regulations remove the cap. The regs also more than double the time period in which officers can take enforcement action against some kinds of unauthorised development, from 4 to 10 years.
So, okay, so some pretty significant changes there. Okay, so can you tell us a bit more about the changes to the deadline?
Yes, the regulations standardise the time period in which the local planning authorities can take enforcement action against unauthorised development in England to 10 years. Previously, the maximum period was 4 years in the case of unauthorised operational development or change of use of any building to use as a single dwelling. Operational development includes any activity that alters the physical or functional characteristics of land or buildings. The new regulations, called the, and it's a complicated name, Planning Act 2008, brackets commencement number 8, and Levelling Up Regeneration Act 2023, brackets commencement number 4, and Transitional Provisions, Regulations 2024, were signed on the 2nd of April by Planning Minister Lee Rowley.
Do the regulations include any other significant changes to the enforcement process?
Yes, also introduced on April 25th are the new enforcement warning notices, where councils will be able to formally alert someone if they are in breach of planning before they take any action. Local planning authorities will be able to use the notices to ask the person concerned to submit a retrospective planning application within a specified period. Any change of use of a building to use as a single dwelling, if it is substantially completed before 25th of April 2024, will escape the new regulations.
Okay, so 25th of April is the big date that planning enforcement seems to need to be aware of for when these changes are coming into effect.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and has the government said why it's made these changes?
Yes, well, the Levelling Up and Regeneration Act 2023 contained within its wide-ranging planning reforms a suite of measures designed to boost local authorities' planning enforcement powers. The measures aim to deliver on the promise in the 2020 Planning White Paper to place more emphasis on the enforcement of planning standards and decisions, an area the White Paper admitted had been a Cinderella function within planning terms.
Okay, I know planning enforcement teams have been cut to the bone in recent years, so it'll be interesting to see how they get to grips with these changes. Was there anything else in the new regulations?
Indeed, yeah. To stop delaying tactics, the regulations also restrict the ability of a person to lodge an appeal against an enforcement notice issued in England, where an appeal against refusal of the enforced against development was refused within the last 2 years. Regulations also give the Secretary of State the power to dismiss an appeal against an enforcement notice where it appears the appellant is causing undue delay to the appeals process. This separate set of regulations specify that enforcement notices must contain A, the address of the land, B, the name of the issuing authority, C, the date of the notice, D, the date of service of copies of the notice, E, a statement of summary of the breach, and F, the deadline for a planning enforcement application.
So has there been much reaction in the sector to these changes?
Some planning consultants have raised concern that longer enforcement times could mean that under-resourced councils will not be incentivised to deal with enforcement breaches within 4 years, so residents will have to tolerate them for longer. At the same time, the possibility of paying greater fines for non-compliance may deter potential offenders. So the net effect of all that is that any kind of breach up until the 24th of April 2024 is got to be enforced by the 24th of April 2028. But anything that happens after that only need be enforced up to the 25th of April 2034.
Right, so that's a huge increase in the time period, isn't it?
Massive increase overnight.
Right, okay. So it'll be interesting to see whether that has any particular impact on the level of planning breaches, particularly given that, as I've said, enforcement teams are cut to the bone. Okay, well, Toby, thanks very much for that. Details on all those stories can be found on planningresource.co.uk. Now I'm going to speak to Alex again, who's going to round up the biggest planning stories from the past week.
First up, some 97% of English planning authorities would be at risk of special measures designation for slow decision making under their current performance if the government's proposal for a new special measures metric to cut down on the use of extension of time agreements is implemented, planning researchers found. Up next, Housing Minister Lee Rowley has refused permission for a 130-hectare solar farm on Greenbelt land in Hertfordshire, after agreeing with an inspector that the scheme's benefits fail to create the very special circumstances needed to justify permission. In another Secretary of State Greenbelt decision, Housing Department Minister Felicity Buchan has refused permission for a highly sustainable renewable energy park on a greenbelt site in Berkshire, after agreeing with a planning inspector that the applicant had failed to provide substantive evidence of the scheme's environmental benefits. Elsewhere, a judge has dismissed a developer's challenge to a planning inspector's refusal of its solar farm application in the Essex countryside, in what is thought to be the first case where the High Court has considered the special measures mechanism applied to local authorities for poor planning performance. In other news, South Cambridgeshire District Council and Cambridge City Council, who have been working together on a joint local plan since 2019, have said that the timetable for the strategy's preparation can no longer be met due to impending changes to the plan-making system, water scarcity, and recent government promises to boost housing delivery in the area. And finally, Hartsmere Borough Council's Planning Committee has refused permission to Sky Studios to build a 70,000 square metre film and TV production studio on Greenbelt land in Hertfordshire, against the advice of officers, after concluding that the very special circumstances needed to justify the scheme had not been demonstrated.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Alex. Some quite significant Greenbelt decisions there in your list. More details on all those stories can be found on planningresource.co.uk. I think my time in Room 106 is now up. I'm going to have to leave you as I make my escape. Well, that's another fortnight of news summarised. We'll be back with our deep dive edition next week when we explore a planning hot topic in a bit more depth. In the meantime, if you aren't a Room 106 subscriber already, don't forget to follow us wherever you normally get your podcasts. And for a daily bulletin of planning news, plus weekly analysis and specialist bulletins, subscribe at planningresource.co.uk. Our thanks to producer Inga Marsden from Haymarket Business Media, and thanks to you all for listening. See you next week.